All right, this is the first episode of Outlaw Shit, the new podcast from LFDW. I'm Sam.
I'm the founder
of LFDW, and Eli is a guy who works for us for no money.
I'm an intern.
And he's 43.
I'm just a old man who wants to ride motorcycles and meet people.
Yeah, this is actually the first episode we recorded. We're not always dropping them in order of recording, but we sat down with Jeremy Pinnell, who is a
great guy.
Yeah, he's a local, originally a local, I should say, country Americana singer from Northern Kentucky.
Definitely a hometown hero.
Yeah, he's one of the guys that plays nationally and internationally. He'll be in Europe this summer. He tours all the time. You can see him a lot of places. We talked to him about a variety of things. Actually, I talked to him about a variety of things because one of our mics didn't work. There's a couple episodes this season where it's just one of us, but generally it'd be both of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple times you'll hear Eli try and talk.
Sometimes I'll have a thought without a mic. I don't let a mic stop me. The lack of thereof.
And, there's a couple points where I yell at him. It's all right.
Yeah.
But Jeremy is, you know, he's an interesting guy. He got into music a little bit late in his life. I think we're 10 years on his first record, OHKY. He had a big hometown show at the Southgate House Revival in Newport that was packed two nights in a row.
Friends of the pod.
Yeah. We do a lot of stuff at Southgate. This spring and summer, we have a couple events there, don't we?
We sure do. Bike shows, festivals,
swap meets. Yeah.
Bike washes, maybe.
Bike washes in conjunction with bike shows.
Yes, there we go.
On May 17th in Newport, Kentucky, Southgate House Revival, we have a bike show. It'll be judged by us because we're annoyed with unrideable bikes winning bike shows. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
If you trailer your bike to the bike show, it probably won't win. That's a joke, but you know what I mean.
But we'd like you to think that.
Yeah, we'd like it to be able to turn on. We have three swap meets there. The first one is May 4th, I want to say. Well, I believe July 6th and August 20th. Those are in conjunction with Biker Central, which is also in Newport, directly across the street from Southgate House. These events are also put on by Broken Bolt Cycles. They are our mechanics. If you see anything that we have done to any of our motorcycles, it is done by Broken Bolt Cycles. We will have some raffles coming up. We have a 68 Ironhead that will be raffled off here in the spring. And then we're looking at doing at least one a quarter. Keep on the lookout for those. We're going to have various bikes that are going to be for sale. You can come to us for builds. It's very exciting and it's very cool.
It is. And don't, if you see me riding on mine has not been made beautiful by Broken Bolts yet. So don't judge them what you see me on.
They're about to make it way better.
So they're about to, yeah.
Piss out gas everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, they will have a feature in an upcoming magazine on what they did to my bike. It's very nice.
It's really nice.
Oh my God. They cut flames in the fender, which I didn't really even think about as an option.
No, I pictured painting.
It's
much, much cooler, the cut in.
It's incredible.
It's going to look great.
I went to Brandon. I told him I had a dream where I had flames in my fender.
Yeah.
And he said, paint or cut. And I went, wait, what? And he said he could cut them. And it turns out he could.
And he did. And it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be, he's also painting it. So they can do, you know, him and Jake can work on any bike that's not fully digitized because it's bullshit.
Yeah.
He can paint them. You know, they got some real, real nice work.
They do such good work. It makes for good radio. That's how beautiful he paints the bike.
Yeah. It's,
it comes through.
It's bare metal. So, you know, just go about picturing 96 Sportster with bare metal and 6 over fork extenders and, you know, flames in the fender.
Cut, not painted.
Exactly. It should be on a shirt. But we have a shirt that's available. Their shirt, you know, which I never get right. It's rusty, crusty, or dusty, or it's dusty, rusty, or crusty. It's an order of those.
I think it's rusty, crusty, or dusty.
Is it the one I didn't say?
I think it's.
It's the way I designed it, too.
Because it's a great looking shirt.
That's available on our site along with a lot of other stuff. We have new shit coming out this spring I'm very excited about. There's a David Allan Coe tattoo shirt, which
it's
is
a good school shirt.
It's absurd.
It's absurd.
You got to be on the lookout for that shit. It's the kind of thing that if you wear out, people will go, "Hey, what?"
Yeah. It's a little more absurd than the cruising shirt, almost.
Which we haven't even made. Because I don't think anyone wants a cruising shirt. On the topic of cruising.
Email if you would like a cruising shirt.
Yeah, cruising
shirt.
Without Pacino. Because
I'm of the opinion that it would be a seller. Sam thinks it's just a one-off.
That I should make one for myself.
Yeah.
On the topic of cruising without Pacino, we have...
It might come up.
It'll come up in every episode.
Yeah, it might.
I ask every guest if they've seen that movie. As of recording this, only one person has. You'll know who Penguins, it is when yeah. you find out. Yeah. it's a very good movie and you should see it. We also put on movies. It's a great film. First Monday of every month at the Esquire Theater in Clifton, Cincinnati. April 7th, which is after this comes out, or before this comes out, is Cruising. August, we're doing Dog Day Afternoon for its 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
We're going to do some other shit in between there. I just don't know what yet. You know, it's generally...
The plan is loose.
Yeah, you know. I email them and they say, sure. We're generally looking at... We did like Dirty Harry, Taxi Driver, Easy Rider. So, you know, Shampoo. 70s New Hollywood often. A lot of anti-heroes. If you like movies...
We love that shit.
We love that shit. If you like movies and seeing them on the big screen and you're near Cincinnati... First Monday of every month at the Esquire Theater. But, you know, I don't know. That's all I got.
That's about it.
We might as well get into this episode with Jeremy Pinnell. He talks about a record he does not remember recording.
He talks about... I like some of the things he brought up.
I would hope.
Everybody's interesting, but I like Jeremy. Plus, I see him at the grocery store, so that's cool.
Yeah. You know, he's a... Someone that you worked with thought we weren't going to get him.
Yeah, my boss at the little hippie grocery store, you know, Pinnell comes in there a lot. He's like, yeah, he doesn't really like do a lot of that. So I hate to shoot you down, but I don't think that's going to happen. When I had mentioned, yeah, Sam and I are going to talk to that guy. And then we did. So
he didn't take into account that I just knew him from before.
Yeah, take that, boss.
We just knew each other.
I did send him a picture of Jeremy and me hugging, sort of a fuck you in front of the building to Patrick. And I was like, yeah, here you go.
Yeah,
you did
it.
You know who this is. He's a cool guy.
Dick. Yeah, man. Well, here's Jeremy Pinnell. You know, it's the first one we recorded, but I think it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I didn't have a mic, so you'll hear like really thoughtful questions where Sam says
that I have to repeat.
You don't have a fucking mic!
These podcasts will be dropping every Tuesday. This is season one. We will have an amount of them. Stay tuned. I'm your black cat, baby. Your bad luck creeping around the band. But I had a question for you about your walkout song.
Yeah, which one was it?
I don't remember. When you played Southgate.
The Boys in the Hood.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
What's up with that? How'd that come to be? That was very cool.
It's just a great song.
Yeah.
It's always one of my favorites when I was a kid.
Dude, I like that.
Hell yeah.
It was a good way to start a country and western show.
I thought so. It was either going to be that or there's this Texas artist named Wake Patron. And he has a song called Air It Out. It was either going to be Air It Out or me and the drummer piped in. I went with him, but I really wanted Wake Patron, you know?
Isn't it your band?
Yeah, but I like to, you know, spread the love, you know, pretend like somebody has some control when they don't, you know.
I do the same thing.
Yeah, dude, you gotta lie to people, dude.
I always tell people, like, yo, I'll take your thoughts into account. When I hired my wife, mm-hmm. I was like, your opinion will always be heard, but it is a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I talked to my boss the other day. I figured out the way to get out when my wife, you know, says something. I just say, "Honey, that's a good point." And he says it doesn't go one way or the other. It's just like, you know, good way to.
That could be a fucking George Jones song.
That's a good point.
Honey, that's a good point. Have you ever seen the movie Nashville?
No.
Okay. There's a part in that shit where there's this dude, Haven something, and he's doing like an old school country and western thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things with that movie is all of the songs kind of suck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're these big, massive stars, but they're all just bad. Like,
the
dog TV
shit. Show?
No, this is the old Altman from 75. But, like, this dude's doing, like, an old George Jones thing, and he has a song, and it's not a parody song, but it is, that's basically, like, for the sake of the children, I have to end this affair.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fucking cracks me up every time. The dog shit song.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, every country and western song ever recorded.
Yeah, but the truth is the children will get over it at some point. You know,
George Jones didn't stop it for the sake of the children.
I don't think anybody does. Maybe.
Yeah, man. I when I saw when we were at the Southgate show, like, I knew that you were a big guy from here, right? Mm-hmm. And you're very proud of it, and it, mm-hmm. you specifically say that in one of your songs. Like, I'm proud to be.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to be just like very fucking loved here? Because that's mm-hmm. like one of the most full I've ever seen that venue, and I've seen great people in there, mm-hmm. but that shit packed, and you mm-hmm. did it two nights in a row.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about like the love you get from the Cincinnati area?
Well, it always surprises me that people show up, you know, like I'm always surprised. And it's nice, dude, because, like, you know, I don't know. You grew up around here, you know, it's like, so it's nice to, it's strange, you know. It's cool, though, to be able to walk into a grocery store and somebody knows who you are. And, you know, it's nice. It's fun, you know.
Is it off-putting?
No, it's never been awkward. It's fun.
I run into it sometimes with the company where, like, we were at a ZZ Top show, me and mm-hmm. my wife, and these like five dudes came up to us, and they were in town from North Carolina where they're stationed. And they were like, "Holy shit, you're the LFDW people!" And it's odd for me.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it happens less for me than for you because your brand is your face.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you know Jeremy Pennell, you're that guy.
Mm-hmm.
If you know my company, you don't necessarily know me. Mm-hmm. But I almost always have to feel like I got to play a character
mm-hmm.
when I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you're on stage, is that like a character or is it you? Do you have a break between real you and show you?
Because mm-hmm.
that always fascinates me with musicians.
I think at one point, maybe. I think as an artist, you're always like trying to figure out who you are, but I think up to recently I really just play it straight. Like, it's just me. I like messing around, you know, like I don't like being serious, you know, and I like giving people a hard time, and like you can totally do that on stage. Like, you can totally have fun with people and joke around with people, you know. Sometimes it does help going to a different headspace when you have to do something. Maybe that's just depending on what situation you're in, you know, whether you know, I'm sure you know, walking into different bars, you're sometimes the vibe's good and sometimes it ain't good, you know? So you kind of got to, I don't know.
You don't have a microphone. Hang on. Jeremy was just asked if he feels like playing is like going to work, and if he begins to play, he walks in like, "I'm going to work now," mm-hmm. or it's like fun, mm-hmm. as opposed to a persona.
I never switch. Like I said, I never switch into anything. Like, it's just me. Like, it's, and that's what people appreciate, dude. They don't appreciate a persona. I mean, maybe sometimes a Big Mac's good, but you know it ain't real food, dude. You know? Like, but for me, like, I like telling the truth. I like being honest. You know, if I get overwhelmed with emotion, or, you know, or if I'm laughing, like, all that's real. Like, that's what people like. They don't like going and seeing fake stuff, dude. People like that, being uncomfortable, whether they say it or not. People like, that's what art is. That's what music is. That's what anything that makes a difference in your life. It's being uncomfortable and like dealing with, you know, and sometimes it is like when you're on the road for 3 weeks and you go, here we go, we got to do this again. You just get in the mindset. You're like, okay, I'm going to go do my best. We played Houston. There was a flood down in Houston a few years back, and we rode in the town. They had the highway shut down, and we got to go in the next night, and we played this place called Dan Electro's Guitar Bar. And one person showed up. One guy, his name was, what was his name? I don't know if he was Mexican or I forget his name, but he had like a different name, you know, you know, I wanted to be in a bad mood. I wanted to be like, what are we doing? Dude? Like, what? My family's at home. What am I doing out here? And instead, I just turned it on and just played a great show. We had a good time. There was a few people at the bar just there, you know, drinking, and they bought a bunch of merch. Just because, like, you know, if I would have just gone through that show and had a bad attitude and done all that, like, it would have been a terrible night.
Do you find the different fulfillment out of playing a show like that versus playing, like, Southgate, where everyone's there and real stoked?
Well, I do like a smaller bar. Like, I like being intimate with people and, it is a different vibe when you're on a bigger stage, and it's you're not in as close with your guys as you want, like, as far as like
the band itself.
Yeah, and you don't, like, the music hits different, so you got kind of got to find that place where you're feeling the music, you know.
I know, like, when Neil Young plays with Crazy Horse, like, they play stadium, especially mm-hmm. in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. but they're always standing within like 8 feet of each mm-hmm. other. And that's because they're like, we're playing like a bar band,
mm-hmm.
you know, if we're far apart, the drummer and bass player won't stay on beat.
Mm-hmm.
But, if we're far apart, we lose the thing that makes this band tight and good,
mm-hmm.
you know? And one of the things, I was thinking about when I saw you was, and this is what I appreciate about like good country and Western music, is when the band's just fucking on,
mm-hmm.
you know? And country and Western in general is not the most complicated genre, but it's hard to stay that on mm-hmm. and that tight. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what separates, you know, different acts is like, well, can you stay even? Mm-hmm. Can you stay together? And when you play like a big place, do you struggle with staying together, or do you actively book shows in smaller venues?
So like we were talking before, I think before we hit record, that, like, current artists don't get enough recognition.
Yeah.
And obviously Sturgill gets all the recognition, but
took him
I saw him down in Cosmic Charlie's or in Lexington, and it was like a realization. Like, his band was, they weren't loud. They were like, it was perfect. Like, and the sound is Cosmic Charlie's isn't like fantastic or anything. They just had so much control over, like, as a band.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to have control.
When was the show?
It was long. It had to be over 10, 12 years ago, 13 years ago.
So it was before the first record?
It was right before or right around the time, because he played Long White Line. That show, it was what that record that was.
I think that's 2011-ish. I could be making that up, but it's around there.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
But I was like, oh, that's. And then if you watch like the 1978 Willie Nelson on ACL, like, you're like, oh, that's how a band should, I think he played the whole Redheaded Stranger album.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's how a band should sound. And then you hear things about Merle walking around and adjusting his band's volume on their amplifiers and shit. And I'm really cautious about sound because you don't like, people don't like loud music, dude, unless you go to like see, you know, somebody like that in that
genre.
You're going
to see Bad Brains. You want to,
I want to hear a country band. I, dude, seeing Dale Watson's band, dude, that's, his band's untouchable, dude. You see him play live, and you're like, oh, I like, that's it. People will come to you.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to them, you know? And that's the one thing I learned at a very early age is like, especially playing like acoustic music, like you don't need to get people's attention. If you do your thing and you're good at what you do, people will listen. And you always see guys like, oh, quiet down, all that. Like, nah, dude, just the crowd will come to you if you just do your thing, you know?
When did you start playing? Because your first record came out, like, you were already in your 30s by that.
Yeah, I was 30. I don't know. I don't even know. Maybe 34, 35.
But that's later than most people that find success. Mm-hmm. Their first record is not at 34 or 35. Mm-hmm. But I imagine you spent a good amount of time preparing yourself to make that record, you know, yeah, in all aspects of your life. It was 34 or 35 years of preparation. What triggered you to go from not doing records, but mm-hmm, I imagine still playing, into being like, this is what I'm doing, this is the time, this is how my life is.
Actually, it's funny you say that. I was thinking about it this morning. I've always wrestled with like playing music. Like, there's a big part of me that inside, I think you all know, going with your gut. I'm sure you listen to your gut.
Generally.
You know what I'm saying? Generally. Yeah. I'd say, yeah. There's
you're
a big part of
should
me that listens to my gut, because that's, I feel like that's another thing that makes good art, you know, is listening to your heart and your gut. You don't like, you know, you can do all the brain shit, do all that, but really, true art comes from somewhere, like a magical place. And there's a large part of me that doesn't feel like I should be doing this, but it's like the world side is kind of like taking me in that direction.
You know? It doesn't feel like you should be doing it in terms of like an imposter syndrome thing, or in terms of just like inherently, I do not feel like this is what I should be doing.
Yeah. But what's crazy is when I sit down with a guitar, I feel like it's what I should.
Why do you think that split came up?
I don't know. I don't, because so I spent a lot of time messing around between my early 20s till the time I recorded that record. I don't talk about this a lot, but I was in and out of Kent County, Boone County a lot. And I ain't got the one mugshot like you see all these guys putting their one mugshot. I got multiple. And like, you know, you say, oh, outlaw country, but I'll get off my soapbox, but whatever. And I'm not proud of that shit. Like, I'm not proud of like living that way. Like, that's the furthest thing. The thing I'm proud of is being able to have good conversations, you know, or keep your commitment or be a good guy. Those are the, but
how to go from being in and out of place to writing a record and putting it out and having it be good.
So I wasn't sold on playing music, and I met up with a guy in Silver Grove. He played drums, and we started messing around playing some music. I got kind of cleaned up when I was in my early 30s, and my buddy Cameron was like, you should play country music. You've always wanted to do it. You know, I always messed around with folk music or all, you know, Americana music. Mm-hmm. You know, because when I was 18 or 19, you're listening to Palace music, Whiskey Town, Uncle Tupelo, all those early Americana acts. Like, and that's kind of like the crossover. And then in my early, I was 17, 18, I got a paycheck audio or a cassette it was like a greatest hit, and like I was just listening to Drink and Driving That Woman Right Off My Mind yesterday, yeah. You know, and I was like, that was one of the songs that did it for me. I was like, oh, that's got everything I want to play in music. And then it kind of snowballed from there. So by the time I was in my 30s, he's like, you should write country music, play country music. And so I wrote Them Days and Nights, which is on Ohio, Kentucky. And that was the first song I wrote for Ohio, Kentucky. And then the second song I wrote for that record was The Way Country Sounds. And it just came real natural. And I was just...
That one still hangs around. Like, I hear that song a good amount.
Mm.
For being the second song you ever wrote. Mm. It seems like a manifest of your career a little bit.
Yeah, it's a true song. Like, it's not, nothing in that song is put on. Not, I appreciate it. I hope so. That'd be a nightmare.
Nope.
Yeah.
When did you first start playing, when you were 18, 19, or was it before then?
I started, my dad had, when I was younger, he had an Ovation Brown Back, because that's what all them guys were into, Kung Fu and Ovation Brown Back. And he said, if you can start playing on that and you learn how to play on that, I'll buy you a guitar. And so I learned three chords, played them over and over again. I'd have to sit it on my lap, you know, because I could, it was too big for me to get my arm around. And then he bought me an electric guitar, and then I kind of took off from there. And then, you know, you go through playing, you're young, hate everybody, you don't know why, you know. And then it's crazy, the older you get, you just love everybody, you know. It's a weird turn, you know. And and I started playing in hardcore bands, punk bands. And then by the time I was 17, that's when I really started to dive into like country music, Americana music. One of the bands that really did it for me was a band called Palace, you know, and I started listening to that first record I did, and kind of like, this is what I want to do. I want to write real music. I want to sing about things, you know.
Almost everyone I know between the ages of like 25, 50, that's into Americana music, does the same shit. They're like, well, I was in hardcore bands and I listened to punk bands, and it's and it's like everyone has that same trajectory, which is odd to me, because if you go back, you know, to the original days of country music, obviously that trajectory didn't exist. But there is a parallel between punk music and hardcore music and country music, even though inherently they're wildly different sounding. I haven't fully figured out why that path is there.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked to Ben Todd, same shit. Mm-hmm. You know, he played punk songs. He was in punk bands. Mm-hmm. Like when I grew up in DC, it was like the third wave of DC punk.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that I knew was in the punk scene. They would be at shows.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, everyone's country and Western, which is cool. Good for us.
Yeah.
But the thing is, a lot of these people who are in the country and Western complain that none of it's good anymore.
Mm.
And like you said earlier, artists not getting recognition.
Mm.
It's tough now, you know, because there's so many people and there's so many outlets, and it's almost overwhelming.
Mm.
So, like, when you're trying to get your shit out there, like you say, people will come to you. You don't, like, you're not a gimmicky guy. There's certain people on Instagram that are very gimmicky Americana people.
Mm.
And I don't know that lasts. I think the real shit lasts when it's like, this is what I do. People come to me. And when you're doing a record, do you think about the crowd? Do you think about anything? Or is it just, this is what I feel?
Every time I've written a record, I've never thought about, I've always just done what I wanted to do, you know. Of course you have those passing thoughts. Like, I wonder what people think about the, you know, and like some of the things, current things I'm writing aren't traditionally country. But if you listen to those early Jerry Jeff Walker records, they're not traditional country. It's like folk music. Like, I mean, and that's the one thing I know you like David Allan Coe too, and he just did whatever he wanted. Like, if you listen to...
He put a phaser on the acoustic guitar.
Yeah, which probably wasn't the best choice, but whatever.
He made it work somehow.
Yeah. But he, like, if you listen to that that Field of Stone record or whatever, or Human Emotions...
That's a nuts record.
It's incredible.
It's so good. And it ends in a punk song.
Yeah, which is wild. Yeah. Dude. That song is just so ahead of its time and far out.
Because that's the B-side that has, like... She finally crossed over and Jack Daniels, mm-hmm. and then just goes, hey, here's a fucking punk song.
Mm-hmm. Suicide.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. And it's also called, if you look at the record, there's mm-hmm. like the A side, which mm-hmm. is the happy side, and the B side, or he alternately calls it the suicide side.
Yeah. So I'm on a hunt for all that original vinyl right now. Got the word, and I know I can go online and find it. It's just sometimes it's nice to.
I got one sitting in the store.
They're hard to find.
Dude, it's the back of it. Literally is a letter of him talking about how he wrote the record.
Which is probably all a lie.
I'm just kidding.
I really don't think this one is.
Yeah,
because it's like the lady I was married to left and took the kid halfway through me writing this record. Mm. So that's the B-side.
Mm.
You know? Mm. And that whole song, Suicide, is like, I'm going to kill her and myself.
Mm. Yeah.
Which isn't true because he didn't. Mm-hmm. But is an emotion that at least existed. You know,
yeah, you got it's worth talking about, I guess.
I mean,
yeah,
he's an interesting artist to me because, like Hunter Thompson, their output artistically is fascinating and in a lot of ways very honest,
mm-hmm.
and Bob Dylan too.
Mm-hmm.
But the character almost overtook the guy,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes harder to have people listen to the shit. And like really take it in because they're thinking about the character of mm-hmm. Raoul Duke or the character of David Allan Coe. Mm-hmm. But I think now with like the internet, it's easier both to be real and also incredibly fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
when you're working on a record, because you have had three in the past and.
Mm-hmm.
Run through that process. I'm curious how it comes about because everyone records differently.
Mm-hmm. So with Ohio, Kentucky, we recorded it and found a local record label, Sofa Burnt Records, mm-hmm. which really wasn't a record label at the time. It was Chris Moeller started a record label himself to push one of his bands because he just tired of dealing with record labels. And so we reached out to him to see if we could make the record. And so that was, you know, I had like a few songs and I changed tempos on like a bunch of the songs. Like the way country sound was like a sped up shuffle. Mm-hmm. It was like a Western swing song, you know? And so was Big Bright World. And I, at last minute, I was like, you know what? I want that like slow, like Hank Williams, like sound, you know, like I don't want to do the, you know, I like the Western swing stuff, but for some reason my brain, let's slow this song down
mm-hmm.
and do that Hank Williams kind of vibe. And then I don't know what starts you on the path of making a record. Really. I don't know why.
Yeah, like,
I
how guess you decide do... now's the time.
Yeah. Like I don't know. It's never been like, okay, this is a set date. We're going to make a new one. This is a set date. It just kind of happens. Like, it's not like with Ties. I don't remember like saying, okay, I want to make a record. I don't even know how it came up.
Goodbye LA seems like a different deal. Like the first mm-hmm. two to me seem more sonically related
mm-hmm.
than Goodbye LA does.
Mm-hmm.
What chain?
This is cool because this is like we were leaving LA and we were outside the show, and we have this rule that we don't talk about the music or the venue or the people in it for like 2 miles down the road with the windows up. We don't say anything. And there was a bunch of beautiful women. And one of the guys in the van, I don't know who said it, said, "Oh, there's so many beautiful women out here." We were joking, but they don't want to have babies, you know? And I was like, "Oh, yeah, that's hilarious." And I was like, "I'm going to write a song." And then I, like, something switched in my head. I was like, "Oh, you can write about whatever you want." You know, I feel like country music, people get caught up in these country music themes or this, or whatever genre they're in, whether folk music, rock music, they get caught in these themes like, "Oh, if I'm a rock musician, I have to sing about X, Y." You know, it's like, and I was like, "Oh, I'm just going to write whatever I want." And then, and that's what kind of like flipped the script for me. And then we were on our way to Texas to record some demos with Jonathan Tyler for Goodbye LA. I didn't know we were going to record Goodbye LA, or it was called. We were just going down to cut some demos to see if we wanted to cut a record eventually. And we recorded Goodbye LA, and we recorded two other songs. And then it was like 6 months later, we were on the road 134 days, 36 days that year, 2019.
That's a lot of days.
Yeah, we were getting after it. And then we ended up recording the record Goodbye LA at the end of, or at the beginning of 2020, end of 2019. And it was just a great experience. Working with Jonathan was, you know, he's such a positive dude in the studio, and he can outwork any, you know, we would close up at the end of the night. He would start listening, and then we would start being like, "Okay, maybe we could add this." And then you find yourself back to work, you know, at 1 a.m, mm-hmm. you know.
I've heard that about a lot of like very good film directors, like mm-hmm. Kurosawa. Mm-hmm. He would edit the day's work. People were like, "When do you sleep?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the result is pretty undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like when people have a vision
mm-hmm.
and they're just driven to the point where, like, I can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I got to wrap this before I can physically calm down.
You ever have an idea that keeps you up at night?
Constantly.
Like late? Yeah.
And last night, my wife was like, "You got to go to bed." And I was like, "I can't."
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just lay in bed, and whether it be write music or taking photos, or like I get visions in my head, I gotta do this, you know. And it's like, it'll drive you crazy, but you know what it's like.
Oh, yeah, I think about it all the time, and it's hard to be like, is that a thing I can solve now?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. sometimes you can't, sometimes yeah. you gotta go to
you
sleep,
you gotta wait. Sometimes you just gotta be patient on some things, too. I like to get things done, and sometimes it's good to just slow down.
But at the same time, it's so fucking gratifying to get that thing done.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
You sure. know, and it'll drive you nuts until you do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's one of the things in general with, I think, people that find any success is a lot of people talk about doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people, like, follow through on the thing. You know, people have asked me, like, "How'd you get this far?" You know, I just did the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you got to do. You just got to mm-hmm. do the stuff, man.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, it's really, I mean, people talk about it. It's just the long game, really.
It's not a like, magic trick.
No. What did Nikki Lane? She's something like, oh, I wish I could remember the saying. Said something about being lucky or working. I wish I could remember. It's such a cool thing. But basically, like, you make your own shit. Like, you make it happen.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, like, you know, and that's kind of the thing. It's like, you just, I don't know, some people give up, you know. Some people, you know, like, my buddy just texted me, Arlo. It's funny that we're both still playing music, you know, and it's like, who would have thought? Like, you know, a lot of our friends we grew up playing music with I mean, and I don't discount them for it. It's just
life happens.
Things, you take different paths, you know. My buddy Cameron, he's an amazing musician, could do anything. And he's doing coding now because he likes doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and playing music or doing any kind of art endeavor is like, it's hard. It, you know, the payoff isn't.
It's all consuming sometimes. And then sometimes you put it out and go, that wasn't what I planned, you know?
Yeah, it's not what I saw.
Like, you know? I don't think, and no one knows, you know, no one is aware that it's not what you wanted or what you saw, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you make it, you kind of made it for you, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of like getting let down, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of art or music get some kicks in the gut, you know.
In terms of art, because we've kind of circled the topic of art in general a couple times. Mm-hmm. Aside from music,
mm-hmm.
what art forms, artists, like, do you find yourself going to, appreciating? Like, where do you find inspiration?
I like movies. I like film. I appreciate the art of acting. I think current actors are great. I don't think they get enough recognition. You know, we always...
I'm super guilty of that. Not giving them enough recognition. I do like Timothée Chalamet now. After that Dylan movie, he solidified it.
It's funny, when that came out, I was like, great. That's all we need is a movie about Bob Dylan. I'm just being funny.
Did you see it?
I heard it's great.
It's incredible.
I heard it's great, but I was... I remember one of the first times I played down in Nashville, I was tuning my guitar, and I said, man, my guitar's a little out of tune. Kind of sounds like Bob Dylan's guitar. And nobody laughed. Like, I'm just messing around. You know what I'm saying? Like, people take that shit serious.
You can't make fun of the god.
I can do whatever I want. I don't care. You think, you know?
What movies do you find yourself watching? This is a topic that fascinates me.
You know, I mean, I like what everybody else likes. You know, there's this scene that I always refer to, one of my favorite scenes in No Country for Old Men, where he's talking to the gas station attendant and he sets a wrapper on the counter and the wrapper just slowly expands. Mm-hmm. Like it's crunched up. You know what I'm saying? That's the stuff that catches my eye.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Just those... me and my wife watched Mulholland Drive the other night, and there's this scene where she came down off, she came off the road and walked down, and there's a scene where she's walking, and there's streetlights and there's palm trees. You know, that's the stuff that catches my eye. So I really like that stuff.
Like the aesthetic
visually.
Settings.
Yeah. That's
like the moving paintings, essentially, of like a good director.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like being able to see that. Like, my friend Melissa is really good at that. Like, we took photos down in Newport one time, and there's just an empty lot, and it had these ribbons hanging on, like a car mm-hmm. dealer. And it wasn't anything special, but there was a whole bunch of good stuff. That being able to, like, see art, just, like, see it, visually see it, is one of my favorite things.
Well, to me, I watch like a movie a day, basically.
Mm-hmm. Must be nice.
It's great. I don't have any kids in.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that often is the place that I find the most inspiration, because mm-hmm. a movie is essentially all aspects of art thrown into one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have the acting, you have photography, you have scene setting. You have like just the research of what things should look like, but you also have music. You have like all of these different avenues of art thrown together to recreate life.
Mm.
And that's really what a movie is. It recreates life, because life has all the types of art thrown together. You know, if we're sitting in here, like when you showed up, we're listening to music. That's how life goes, you know, but there's also paintings on the wall or posters. So to me, I think that watching movies kind of tells you, or at least tells me, the most about life of any form of art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that, like, I don't love music. I do. Mm-hmm. I made my company based on it.
Mm-hmm.
But movies themselves fascinate me, and I obsess over the kind of, like, mm-hmm. how they are made.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I can get stuck on movies forever. So you gotta mm-hmm. fucking push me off this. So
no, no. I, dude, anywhere from Predator to Goodfellas, I'm in, you know? Like, just any kind of movie, you know? Like, I got
so many hard opinions on them.
Oh, I'm
I
sure.
got hours on this shit.
I'm sure. So, yeah, I got my opinions on the Grateful Dead, but we're not going to get into them.
No, we want to keep it nice, man. What's
for
your
sure.
favorite thing in the world?
For sure.
Yeah, another thing, though, and this is a wild change, you're a jiu-jitsu guy,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of how I know you personally, because mm-hmm. we met through plane.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that come into your life? Because you weren't doing that growing up, because no one was when you were growing up. How'd that come into your life? How'd jiu-jitsu, like, why do you do
it? So it was at the beginning of the pandemic, and I was texting a buddy, and I was like, I want to learn how to fight. And I always hear everybody talk about jiu-jitsu, and I just, you know, I just was like, okay, no matter, you know how uncomfortable it is, your first class.
It's still uncomfortable.
It still is, but it's better now than it used to
yes.
be, right? My first class, you're like, I don't even know how to tie my belt. You know, like, what am I doing? What am I doing in clothes guard? This
you
is
very
weird.
Rarely feel like a baby in adult life.
Yeah, and then I had this, you know, 16-year-old girl beating the hell out of me, you know, and it's like,
I guess I don't know how to fight. You know, that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't
yeah.
know shit about this.
People think that's the one thing that's been so great and so humbling, and like being like just the basics. You know, it's funny how people say, oh, I think I'd be all right.
You
no,
wouldn't.
You ain't going to be all right. But, you know, and so I started training at Carlson Gracie in Richwood. And I was running one day, and I saw the Carlson gym mm-hmm. in Newport, right down the street, like less than 2 minutes from my house. So I started training down there, and my buddy Mickey, you know Mickey Berwanger?
I met him at your show.
One of the salt of the earth, dude. One of the best dudes I've ever met.
He actually started the gym that I trained. He was
oh,
one of
really?
The original guys there. He didn't. He was one of the main group.
Vision?
Yeah.
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 But he... I asked him, I was like, do you think I'm too old to be doing this? He's like, no, go do it. And he got me into it. And then, you know, we had all that time. We had 2 years of not doing anything. And I wasn't playing music at the time. And I just spend my time at the gym, you know, day classes, night classes. And then.
And you compete too.
I competed once. And
okay.
And it was the worst experience ever. I had no idea of the adrenaline dump that happens when you hop on
different.
The mat. I mean, dude, I don't see how fighters do it. Like, I don't see. You got to be a whole different kind of human. Dude.
The weirdest thing that I've ever experienced in my life was I broke my foot in the fight, and I, like, didn't realize it for 2 weeks. Because I can't pinpoint the moment that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then when the fight, like, I didn't feel anything. The whole fight ends. I'm like, my leg's fucked up. But I remember checking this dude like 4 times in a row hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's why, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 weeks later, I was like, my foot's broken. But the adrenaline is so intense at that moment that you're like, no, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also why you'll see fighters, you know, if they have a stoppage or like a foul or something, a fight can change on the dot.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the person's adrenaline just fell off. But with a jiu-jitsu tournament, you got to go multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one and done.
No.
It's a tough thing to manage.
Yeah, I think I did 6 matches that day.
And you feel it everywhere.
The first, by the sixth match, I was more on it than I was the first one. The first one, I'd never competed. So when I got on the mat, I felt like a sandbag, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a crazy amount of adrenaline.
And also, you're like, this guy doesn't like me. I don't know this guy. You know, he's trying to actually rip my shit off.
Yeah,
like,
well, he was doing a bunch of shady shit. Like, doing a bunch of dirty shit. They called him on it. And then we did like two matches with that guy. I clearly won the second match, you know, like, well, not the first, second. But the first match, I was just like, I had no idea. As soon as I stepped on the mat, my body felt like it was like 3,000 pounds. You know what I'm saying? Just the weight. And then same thing. I left there. I had a black eye. I didn't even know. My wife comes home. I walk in. She's like, "Are you okay? What happened?" You just don't even know. You know what I'm saying? You're just.
You don't feel it.
No. But I just went to day class at Blaine's gym on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of been out for about 6 months. And it was really nice to have that engagement again. You know, and I went to Muay Thai class last Sunday. And
how long have you been doing stand-up stuff for?
So I started doing jiu-jitsu. And then when I went to Newport, I really wanted to learn how to strike. Because, like, I just love that. I love jiu-jitsu, but I almost like Muay Thai more.
I do now. It's switched for me. Mm-hmm. Partially because I'm like, well, this is, I can do this for hours. Yeah. I can wrestle for way less.
3 minutes?
Yeah.
I can do like 3 minute rounds. I'm a cook, you know?
Yeah, but I can, we're just going at 50% striking. I don't need a clock.
Yeah. So it was nice. It was nice. It's nice getting punched in the face. It's nice punching people in the face. You know, it's like,
love it.
It feels good, you know?
Hard to explain to people.
People don't know. People don't know.
Did you used to fight in your life outside of, or like before you did this? Because I used to like do that. I spit on a guy in a bar one day for fun when I was in college just because I was bored, right? So that was an inherent part of my personality. and if you talk to a lot of my friends that knew me before I started training, they'd be like, yeah, he was kind of a dick, you know? He would just do shit like that. So training took that out of me because it answered all my questions. Mm-hmm. Well, I know I can beat the fuck out of people, but I also know, you know, that they can beat the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the baddest guy in any room, depending on who's in that room.
Mm-hmm. Well, you always know, like, respect who you're sparring or rolling with. Like, you always have to, like, keep a safe distance.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the cool thing about fighting. It doesn't teach you, like, it teaches you, like, it doesn't make you want to fight.
No.
I've never left the gym and wanted to beat anybody up. I've never, you know, I remember we did promotions one night. And you know, promotions night's like 2-3 hours long. And by the time you leave there, you're just cooked.
People are getting Shark Tank and shit.
I remember sitting at a stop to get gas. And I'm at the gas pump. I was like, I don't want to ever fuck with anybody again. Like, you know, like, and when we travel and we're on the road, I'm going in bars, play music. I'm trying to make money for my family, get home. I ain't trying to tough guy anybody. I ain't got nothing to prove. I don't want to hurt nobody, you know, but I feel good that I know that I have more of a chance of surviving. You know what I'm saying?
Before training, though, did you want to get into fights? Did you get into fights?
When I was younger, you think you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some of my friends really liked, you know, I was never that guy. I was always a little scared, you know, it's just who I am. I was always unsure of myself, you know, I got into a few things, but, you know, I never like sought it out. You know, I started trouble. I had a big mouth, you know, but knowing what I know now, I would have never said anything to anybody.
There's a saying, that it's said at our gym a lot, which is about people that want to fight, right? And they haven't done it. They're like, they come there and they're like, I'm gonna do MMA. And basically the saying is like, people think it's one way, but it's not that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not.
No.
It's in a, like being in a cage looking at a guy who's gonna try and fucking kill you.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
In front of people.
Mm-hmm.
Does not feel a way that is describable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's only one way to get that, and it is not the way you thought it was going to feel. And I think that comes up a lot when you're fighting, like, in life, is, you know, you think struggle is one way, and it's, like, honest, but it's not that way. It sucks. Mm-hmm. It feels weird and bad, you know? And people getting into things like jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and all that on a whole is beneficial. But I also run into people who take it too far, you know, and it becomes their whole character and personality. And they wind up thinking that they're the, you know, they're the shit. It goes the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, you know that with being in the gym, that there's always those persons. But overall, like, I love the competition. Like, everybody at the gym's usually there to help you out, like, to, you know, and be real helpful. But there is a level of competition, which I love. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, there's so much, you know, because ain't nobody going to let you fuck them up, you know? They're going to, if they're on the hierarchy, they're going to let you know. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's what's really just, it's been a great thing for me just in my life in the world, because it's like, I ain't trying to get nobody. And you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great experience training. You know, I'm 47. I probably shouldn't be, you know, rolling with 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds getting beat up, but I don't care. Fucking tight for 47, you know what I'm saying?
We have a guy at our gym, Norm, who I believe just turned 70,
mm-hmm.
and he just started doing Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing jiu-jitsu for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and he don't shy away,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, mm-hmm. fuck it.
Yeah, what else? I love it. Like, I don't see myself not doing it right now. You know what I'm saying?
It's a good avenue for relief.
It is. You know, and you got to have those. There's all kinds of things I do. But that's one of my favorites.
Yeah. You have a new record coming out.
Yeah. I know we talked about not talking about it, but we said maybe it'd be all right.
It will, because we're going to release this late.
Okay. there's a new record. I'm excited about it. It sounds different than anything I've done. I haven't talked about this. Usually when you talk about a record, you got a spiel down. Like, you know what you're going to say. You've done the interviews. You've done, so you can say blah, 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 like I did with the Jonathan Tyler record. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that record. The Ohio, Kentucky, I know the story behind that. Ties of Blood, I don't really remember making, you know. But with this new record, I really don't have any things set down for it.
How far along in the process are you?
It's done. It's mixed, mastered almost 2 years now.
Okay.
Mm.
How is it different?
I'll go ahead and say it since this isn't going to be released now. But I got to work with a producer that I've always wanted to work with, and it was kind of a shock, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I really liked this guy's music for a long time, and I was a big fan. He has a record called Don't Wait Up. It's like a 6-song EP, and I always appreciated how he electronic music with country music. I still feel like to this day he's the only one who pulled it off. Like, you know,
a lot of people try.
A lot of people try, but legitimately, he's the only one ever pulled it off. And
are you doing that?
No.
Okay.
I didn't do electronic music. I'm not against it, but you know what's crazy? We can talk about that later. But I, so we got a new record coming out. You know, it sounds different than anything I've done, and it's focused on just the song, not a bunch of crazy stuff around it. It's just a song, you know.
Are you going to be out touring to support that?
Definitely. I know we're going to Belgium this year. Hopefully we're going to the UK this year.
Have you been to Europe before?
I have.
Okay.
I have. So it was funny. My son was a year old, and I think at that point I was like, 3.5 years sober, four years sober, and the first place we go is Amsterdam, you know, and there's weed and hookers everywhere, and I'm just like chilling, you know, drinking coffee, you know, but great coffee, the waffles are good, but you know, and that's a whole nother thing, But I love Europe, you know. We went to an art museum in Amsterdam. You walk in and the Van Gogh, the self-portrait, you know, that Van Gogh portrait here.
Yeah.
It was just like craziest to walk in, and that's the first thing, you know. Yeah. It's incredible.
It's dude, so much older.
It's so much older. People don't understand it, dude. I was standing in front of a building somewhere in the UK that was like built in like 700
or
something. I'm like, what is this?
I was in Bath in England. Mm-hmm. And it's called Bath because they're really baths, there. Right? And you're looking at that shit. Mm-hmm. And if you've been to San Francisco, they have that bath there, like at Land's End. There used to be a bathhouse. And it looked like Roman ruins, but it's from the fucking early 1900s. Mm-hmm. You go to Bath, England, and you're looking at this shit with like the aqueducts that run underground. And you're like, this shit was built when? You know what I mean? And I'm looking at this. And our American sense of history is short, man.
It's like 200 something years.
Yeah.
And some change.
And your people don't realize you can go back to a place like Oxford, the college, 1100.
Mm-hmm.
Still an active college.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Miami. They're like, we were founded in 1809. It's
crazy
like,
day
cool.
in Oxford, by the way. Oxford's a neat town, but it's a lot of tourists.
And there's very few ways to get arrested. They told us that out of the gate at freshman orientation, they were like, you will be fine unless you drink on the actual street.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't do that, please.
Mm-hmm. I remember I went to like a Thai restaurant there or a Chinese restaurant.
There's a lot of them.
There was a lot of them. And they did not, because I covered that dude. You know, it's like, it was like obvious. Like,
well, a lot of them are open by the Chinese students. So they have a place to eat. Good.
It was different, but
okay.
But I like being over. I like. Yeah, it's great.
It was a good place to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
sure.
It was fun.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was
no doubt.
I got all my shit out in 4 years, basically. Mm-hmm. Well, I've lived that.
Mm-hmm.
Are crowds different in Europe for country and Western?
What's really cool is they're not like American crowds. We are like, every show is like being at the rodeo, you know, here in America.
Mm-hmm.
And being over there, there's such a respect. Art music,
like they're quiet
in Germany, they're super quiet, very attentive, and then you almost have to like be like, okay, song's over, thank you, and then you get an applause, you know. Maybe it's different in other, this is just my experience. I'm sure there's different crowds, you know, wherever. The shows in the UK, everybody was super respectful, really listened, you know, like. And you're getting more of that in the United States now, you know, like we had to settle down a bit, but most of the time
we're a new place.
We're wild. Over here, dude.
We're rowdy. We don't know how to listen to art.
We don't know how to respect anybody over here, you know, which I don't hate. It's a cool culture. You know, I love it here. I think America is probably my favorite place I've ever been. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it's the most fun.
Cincinnati is my favorite place that I've ever lived. I've lived a lot of places. Like I lived in New York City, Brooklyn, grew up in DC, lived in San Francisco. Those are all places I hear people talking about like want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to.
Yeah.
It's fucking, you know, jump the shark in all those places.
Well, I like what's cool about Cincinnati is you go 20 minutes north and you're in farm country, and then you go 20 minutes south and you're in hill country. It's like you got hillbillies on either side of Cincinnati, you know. It's like you don't have to go far to get away,
right?
You know,
like I love visiting LA. Like,
yeah, I think LA is great.
I love
people,
but it's massive.
It is. It's very big. But people talk things about different cities, and I love going to all of them.
Yeah,
except Kansas City. But anyways,
I had an issue with Austin for some reason.
I like Austin. I think you just have, it's one of those things where you got, you know, just like Nashville's.
Have a good time in Nashville.
I have a good time everywhere. Like, every people talk shit about cities, you know, like, I remember during the pandemic, New York, don't even go up there. We go up there and everything's fine. And they said the same thing about LA. Don't go out there. It's crazy. And you go out there and everything.
It's great. It's
beautiful.
When I lived in San Francisco, that was like a peak of all the propaganda about how terrible the city was. Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, the Tenderloin sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But it
sure
sucked.
It's always sucked.
Yeah, yeah. 1884. Mm-hmm. You know, it was bad then too.
Mm-hmm.
Cities have bad areas.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the fucking city.
Yeah. There's bad people in cities. You know, there's good people too, but like.
You go to the Castro, it's a nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, same with LA. If you go to Skid Row, it's going to be a little rough. You go to Silver Lake, probably going to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's a nice thing about Torrance, that you don't have to fall into a lot of the propaganda about mm-hmm. places. You're like, well, I've seen it.
You get to go out and see what's really going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get your own opinion. And you know what? We've gone everywhere, pretty much everywhere in the United States. You know, obviously not everywhere, but like we've been a lot of. And everything's fine. Everything's okay. You know, we're all good. Americans are great. You know, people in Europe, great. You know, actually, people in France are a little rude, but I get it. You know, whatever. You know,
people in New York are a little rude, but they're still
it's
great.
A different vibe. But people in New York will help you out. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's definitely there's definitely a clear line between the because we're right on the border. Like Covington's called the gateway of the South. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So we get some of that southern hospitality, and then we get that northern a little bit of that northern bit. But overall, there's something that happens when you get that far up north where people aren't nice. You
fucking
know?
Cold.
Maybe.
And there's a lot of people.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
You know, I mean, when you got to deal with all those people all the time.
Oh, right. 100%.
Like when I lived in New York, we would, you know, be coming home on the train at 3 a.m., walking through Crown Heights and like fucking family.
Mm.
Why are there families out? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Well, because those people are immigrants and there's different rules in the culture of when kids go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just like, you got to deal with so much different input coming at you
mm-hmm.
that you can't take everyone in. But if you go to places in Kentucky where there's 500 people in a town,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the input.
Mm-hmm.
They're excited to see you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes.
Sometimes they're not. That's true. Sometimes you go down a river, like Deliverance.
Mm-hmm. It can happen.
The question was if he's been poorly received or well received based on appearance at different places.
What's crazy is that usually if you perform well, people like. I was always curious how a guy from Kentucky would do in Texas. People in Texas love music. They love art, music, such a great place. And I was always curious. But if you're good at what you do, everybody likes you for the most part. You know? And if you treat people with respect, like that's the thing. We have a rule. Like you treat everybody with respect. The clubs, the venue, the sound guy, the waitresses, the waiters, the bartenders, like that's what it's about is being good people, you know? And like if you do that, dude, you're fine. So if somebody don't like you, it's because they
I think that's a good spot to end this on, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank
I
you.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Yeah.